ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Looking at your finances more closely this tax time? On the ABC Business Daily podcast, we break down the stories shaping employment and the economy. And as the financial year comes to a close, we're breaking down what you need to know about super, write-offs, property, and shares in a special tax series. Hear it now. Search ABC Business Daily on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Iran war broke out, we were warned of an oil shock not seen since the 1970s, when fuel was rationed. We're told the price of oil could reach $200 a barrel, and airlines might ground planes. But none of that has come to pass. So why? Today, the ABC's Global Affairs editor, Laura Tingle, on why China has a lot to do with it. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Laura, on any given day, we wake up here in Australia and we're met with news out of the Middle East. The ceasefire is steady, the ceasefire is shaky, the US and Iran are trading attacks again. It really is a whirlwind, isn't it?
It's a whirlwind which I think defies our use of the term ceasefire.
Yes.
Iran and the US have traded new attacks and threats with little sign of a de-escalation to get the two-week-old ceasefire back on track.
US Central Command says Iranian missile and drone storage locations, along with coastal radar sites, were targeted following an attack on a ship transiting the Strait of Hormuz.
US President Donald Trump then announced talks would be held in Qatar between the US and Iran, but Iranian officials denied any scheduled meetings with US teams.
I think it's pretty dubious that it is a ceasefire, for one. And I think the other thing is, I don't think that, you know, there's any base level agreement which gives you room for confidence that anything has been agreed enough, or that there's any scintilla of trust between the US and Iran which makes you think that there can be forward progress at this stage. So yeah. It's just, I think we're just in this absolute quagmire at the moment.
Yeah, and there's just great uncertainty over the Strait of Hormuz still. And, you know, you try and ignore all this if you could, but there is so much at stake, including, of course, the entire global economy. So that's what we're going to consider today. And, of course, a lot of that comes down to oil. And for a while, the cost of crude oil, it was really just bouncing around, wasn't it, depending on the news of the day?
It was. After a month or two, people were saying, you know, the real experts in the oil market were saying, look, with this sort of cutoff of oil, the price should be like $200 a barrel, not 100.
Yeah.
So it's been one of those crises and collapses where any day now for a couple of months, you felt like you'd go to the Bowser and there'd just not be any petrol there. There wouldn't be any aviation fuel, whatever. And it didn't happen.
No, interesting. Yeah. So despite this real volatility, the price of crude oil has actually now stabilized. So just before we get to the reason why, what are we actually seeing now?
Well, it's back down below $100 a barrel.
At about 72.7 US per barrel, that's basically where the oil price was before the war even began, back in late February.
And, you know, the forward markets are sort of suggesting it's probably going to stay there.
Okay, so let's look then, Laura, at what is happening, because it does provide a fascinating insight into how the global economy is working to withstand this shock of the Iran war. You point first to China.
Right. So to say I point to it, I point to the International Energy Agency, which put out a really interesting paper last week about all of this. And essentially, it was pointing out that there was a bit of a glut in oil in the immediate period preceding the outbreak of war. Now, a lot of that was absorbed by China, which was really building up its reserves. And we knew that when the war started, its reserves were much more substantial. But despite that, you were already seeing this sort of softening of the influence of OPEC and just this glut because the world was starting to move to more renewables and other forms of energy.
Yeah, so before the war began, oil supply had been running well ahead of demand, and China had been buying a heap of it and putting it into storage. And it was a huge amount, right? Like 1.4 billion barrels put aside. But how did that help the rest of us?
Well, a couple of things that are worth noting. Not only did it have big reserves, but China had sort of quietly become the world's biggest refiner of oil at the beginning of this year. So it actually has this really pivotal role in the supply of refined oil products. And one of the things that it did immediately, which you can do when you run a control economy, is it just slashed purchases of crude oil from the Gulf by 40%. And that's 4.6 million barrels a day, which is really quite staggering.
Yeah.
And so since it is such a dominant purchaser of oil from the Middle East, that really took a lot of the pressure off. So it's been a really fascinating picture that's gradually been revealed about that. That was one of the really key underlying reasons why things weren't as bad as everybody else went round scrambling for oil wherever they could find it to replace this, you know, this 20% cut in supply coming out of the Gulf in the first months of the war.
So China is a really huge reason why the global economy has survived this war so well. Mm. But it's not just China, is it? Because other nations, they were really quick to diversify.
They were. And, you know, take little old Australia as an example of that. I don't know if you remember the Prime Minister doing that trip around the region to places like Brunei and Malaysia saying, hello, you remember us, we're really good friends, you know, can we have some more of your refined oil or whatever?
Yes.
And suddenly the government, he was saying, oh, we've secured another 100 million barrels or whatever. And we were doing it from non-traditional markets, the United States, Africa. Mm. We sort of signed these deals with places like Malaysia and Brunei to sort of lock in supply.
By building regional cooperation on energy security and economic resilience, we strengthen our own fuel security and our own economy. And the best way to deal with this global crisis is indeed to work together as partners and as neighbours.
And everybody started to do that, and it had these quite staggering effects. I mean, the US is now one of the, before all of this started, has become one of the world's biggest petroleum exporters because of the fracking sector in the US. But its exports have jumped by nearly 25% this year, and even Venezuela, which, you know, it already had its own problems and now it's got really devastating ones, but it also has really pretty dirty oil, which is nobody really wants, but its oil exports jumped by 40%. Brazil's jumped by a third. Singapore, which is one of the world's biggest oil refiners, is now importing over 10% of its crude from the US, which it previously never imported any from the US. So all of that shows how the global economy has proved quite resilient and quite flexible. And on top of that, of course, Saudi Arabia started moving a lot more oil through this east-west pipeline that runs across to the Red Sea. The UAE, which of course sort of almost straddles the bit that pokes up into the Strait of Hormuz, started moving oil through Fujairah, which is a port on the outside of the Strait of Hormuz, and it's now doubling its capacity with a pipeline that's being built in record time. So it's been fascinating to watch. Now, of course, we should say that it's not just oil that was going through the Strait of Hormuz, and you know, there are all these other knock-on effects from other things like fertilizers and other sorts of goods, but you know, oil was this overwhelming threat to the economy around the world, just screaming to a halt, and it just hasn't happened.
Yeah, so the world basically managed to become less reliant on the oil that usually passes through the Strait of Hormuz. Mm. And we have seen a similar quick restructuring before, haven't we, with Germany after Russia invaded Ukraine. So the world could have learnt from that.
Yeah. So one of the big criticisms of German sort of geostrategic positioning in the last 20 years is that it basically bet heavily on getting a supply of oil and gas from Russia. Then when the war in Ukraine started and, you know, there was the push for sanctions and everything else, essentially there was the big Nord Stream gas pipelines. Germany decided to cut off the supply of oil and gas from Russia. You know, there was massive increases in prices as a result in Germany. But within 12 months, Germany had put in place 3 floating LNG processing plants, and within 12 months it had 5, some onshore and some offshore. So, you know, while it still got the price shock and, you know, the systemic shock, it was able to readjust to what was an extraordinary change in the geopolitical situation, and where it had had so many eggs in the Russian basket for a couple of decades, but was able to move and adjust itself to the new reality.
And as you mentioned before, of course, there has been a huge shift because nations have become less energy hungry. So that has helped the global economy during this time of crisis.
It has. We see much more involvement of most economies in the services sector, healthcare, finance and the like, rather than really heavy industry manufacturing. Appliances are more energy friendly. We've obviously got a lot more renewables. But I think, you know, you just see a lot less really heavy oil dependence. Now, it's not going to go away, but it does show what a difference it is from, say, the global economy of the 1970s, where, you know, people having to sort of stop driving in the US because there just wasn't enough fuel.
And, I mean, just to note before we move on, though, that there are nations, of course, that have been harder hit because of all of this than others, particularly our neighbours in Southeast Asia.
Absolutely. They didn't have reserves, and it's not even just the oil issue for them, it's particularly gas, just because so many of those countries in Southeast Asia in particular and in the subcontinent rely on gas for things, the day-to-day things like cooking. And fertilizer, of course, remains this really huge issue. So, you know, it doesn't sound like I'm painting a very rosy picture, but compared to the sort of edge of the cliff feeling that we had in the early days of the war, it's just not played out as badly as we thought it would.
All right, so Laura, the global economy, it has really diversified to withstand the shock that has come with this Iran war, the oil shock. Now, Australia, as you say, it was really quick to open up new supply lines. Do you think we've diversified enough, though? Going forward, should we really rely at all on the Middle East for the supply of oil? It's pretty risky at this point.
Yeah, well, the Middle East is the Middle East and it's still got a lot of oil.
Yes.
But I think it is such a lesson in diversification in general. You know, I think the lesson in all of this is that we just have to rewire ourselves. And I think you sort of see that in the sorts of diplomacy that the government's been trying to enlist, you know, that trip through the region that the PM did and Penny Wong did. So the great irony of Donald Trump, in a way, you know, who was basically trying to close the world down, is actually forcing everybody else to be much more interdependent in a much more complex way than they previously would have been.
Overall, can we really rest easy now? You know, it's not going to be as bad as initial predictions suggested.
Look, I don't think we can rest easy. I think the situation in the Middle East still remains very unresolved. Mm. And, you know, it's not just about whether Iran closes the Strait of Hormuz again, but, you know, the impact on the Gulf states has been pretty devastating. They're going to have to rethink the way they deal with the world. Iran is in this incredibly strong position, and that's got to have, you know, not just political and sort of military implications, but others as well. And slightly digressing, of course, we're now seeing this really fascinating situation where Vladimir Putin is conceding that Ukraine is hitting its oil refineries. You've got oil shortages in one of the world's biggest oil-producing countries, Russia, and that's going to have a knock-on effect as well to the world market. So wherever we look, there's more uncertainty.
Laura Tingle is the ABC's Global Affairs Editor. This episode was produced by Bridget Fitzgerald. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. To get in touch with the team, please email us on ABC News Daily at abc.net.au. Thanks for listening.